We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
My name is Jari Bolander. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Ethos Podcast. On this podcast, we're going to take a deep dive into the traits, values, beliefs, and skills of all sorts of entrepreneurs to learn how to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient world. Let's get started. Hey, everyone. I wanted to quickly jump in and let you know about the release of the audio version of my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, narrated by David A. Knesser. If you want to support the show, you can buy it wherever audiobooks are sold. Links are also in the show notes. Now on to my guest for today, Trav Bell, the self-proclaimed number one bucket list expert in the world. Trav first found success as an entrepreneur with a personal training franchise. Then depression struck. He started looking for answers, mainly through taking seminars, attending events, and trying out experiences. Eventually, he's decided to take what he learned and started teaching it to others. At his very first seminar, when he shared that he had a bucket list, someone in the audience said, "You're the bucket list guy." Trav took the label and ran with it. Trav has been keeping a bucket list since he was 18, when he realized that many people don't have a written down list of what they want to do and accomplish in life. He latched onto this as a tool to teach people how to live more happy, purpose-filled lives. In the last 10 years, he's traveled all around the world giving talks and now has a cadre of certified bucket list coaches in 22 countries. His goal is to share his teachings with 10 million people so as many people as possible can live a regret-free life. Now, let's get better together. Trav Bell, welcome to the podcast.
Jari, hope very, very happy to be here, mate. Stoked to be on the show.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate it, man. I really do. And we met through matchmaker.fm, which I always
Sounds
say
like Tinder.
Like Tinder. It's Tinder for guests for sure. Podcast. You're totally right. Cause it's like, gosh, I get so many from matchmaker.fm and they've all been great.
I've been very popular.
Yeah.
I've been very, very popular. And
it's great. No, it's awesome to meet you. And you know, I'm really looking forward to talking about, you know, your bucket list kind of, I don't know, initiative or whatever we'll kind of call it as we weave in and out of that. But
sure.
But before we get started on that, like I always like to say is, well, why don't you tell me a little bit about how you got to do what you're doing today?
Yeah, look, I've been running around the world as the bucket list guy for about 10 years and primarily as a speaker and as a coach. And now in the last 3 years, I've leveraged it out and scaled it out. Now we've got certified bucket list coaches teaching my stuff in 22 countries around the world. So I'm now founder CEO of that company as well, which is a licensing kind of company. But this whole bucket list message actually came about. Someone called me the bucket list guy after the first seminar that I actually put on. So real quick backstory, I was the I found a franchisor of a chain of personal fitness training studios. So that was my first business in personal fitness training back in the early 90s when this personal training wasn't really an industry. So I grew it from one client up to a chain of personal training studios and helped tens of thousands of clients, not just me, but my trainers as well, tens of thousands of clients, over 2 million personal training sessions. But I went through a time in my life where things got on top of me. And, there's some toxic people in my life, things just downward spiral. I don't have to tell you about that, mate, but it's, things started to go wrong. The wheels started to fall off. I slipped into a state of depression, but instead of being prescribed, going on heavy antidepressants, because that's, it's a band-aid effect, isn't it? And I wanted to get to the root cause of what I was going through. And for me, I found myself, like summing up the courage, getting out of the house and going to events and walking on fire and breaking boards and bending bars and breaking arrows and hugging it out and high-fiving it with strangers and you share, I share kind of moments and,
right.
All that personal development kind of stuff. And I reckon if you put on a course back then, mate, I would have bought it, run to the back of the room, upgraded, gone again. Exhausted all my credit cards and right. Look, at the end of the day, got some good and got to the root cause of it. So I really wanted to get to the psychology. I've always been interested in psychology. And I was kind of at the tail end of all that. And a friend of mine said, Trav, you're in all these seminars. Why don't you teach this shit? And that actually helped me compartmentalize what I was going through at the time. And it's like, all right, it justified all the money I'd spent too. So put on and I'm continually, curious, continually learning, always learning. And that's just how I am. And you're probably the same. But then wanting, packaging it all up and then paying it forward was a big, that's how I really learned. I learned by teaching. Mm-hmm. And so I put on a talk. I had 40 people that turned up. I nearly had to pay them to be there. It was and on reflection, it was shit compared to what I do now. Done a TED talk. I'm a certified speaking professional now. I've talked on nearly every continent except for Antarctica. I'm still looking for a gig in Antarctica, but I've talked all around the world to some massive groups, big companies. That first seminar was a shocker compared to the standard that I've got for myself now. But it was about halfway through that first seminar that I started sharing the fact that I had a list to do before I die. I always had one written down since I was 18. And a lot of people didn't know this about me, so I shared this. And this first seminar, by the way, was like 10 years ago. So, I've been carrying around my little list to do before I die, which is actually written down out of my head and actually written down, which is, by the way, kids, that's the first step in actually hitting a goal, let alone a bucket list item, to actually write shit down. Oh, I know. Yeah. I know it's so analog. You remember this thing called it's called paper, if you can see the screen or you're listening. We've got this thing called paper and this thing called a pen. It's a crazy invention, I know, but it's so analog. And all you millennials out there, it's like this thing that we used to do. So you write if you actually write down your goals, you've got a 42% more likelihood of them actually manifesting. If you actually just write down your goals, so fuck it, you might as well just write down your goals. You're halfway there, so let alone bucket list items. So I've always had my little list to do before I die, my little blue folder, and it was always what I recalibrated on, what I reflected on, what I upgraded, crossed things off on, and I shared this with the group at that first seminar, and I quickly realized when I asked the rest of the group, who else has got one of these? And I was the only freak in the room. So I said, what the hell do you want to do before you die? And everyone's like, I don't know, pay off the house, put the kids through school, maybe do a bit of travel when I'm older. I'm probably sicker. Nothing depresses me more because we live in a delayed gratification society, right? I'll be happy when syndrome.
Yeah.
Indeed.
So what depresses me the most is people work their guts out. And by the way, and I know you're up in San Fran, did you say, mate?
San Francisco, yeah. Right.
87% of Americans, 87%, this is a current stat, 87% of Americans are what they call disengaged at work.
Yeah.
That's nearly 90% of the population go to work every single day, collect the paycheck, and then come home and they're just like waiting for the paycheck and then hope that's it. And they're not inspired.
Right.
Imagine doing that your whole life, right? And then having 5 to 10 good years in retirement when you cash in your 401k and then going and then knocking off your perch, you know, and then you're out.
Yeah.
It's like that makes me so sad. It really does. Like, and I'm talking to, you know, a lot of people when I say this. Even if you're an entrepreneur, but let alone in a job, you can work your guts out. And then we live in this delayed gratification society. I'll be happy when waiting for the perfect time or someday to come around. Mm-hmm. And there is no someday. That ain't a day of the week. There is no perfect time. So I want people to be happier now. Mm-hmm. So I started sharing my list at this seminar, and one of the girls who was in the audience in the Q&A time said, how's the list to do before you die stuff? It's really fired everyone up. It's like a bucket list. You're like the bucket list guy. I went, light bulb moment. Oh. Yeah, all the stars, the tectonic plates, it all came together.
Yeah.
God smiled on me. There was unicorns.
It was crazy. Rainbows, unicorns, and
you know, I don't know where they came from.
Manna from heaven.
Oh my God. The seas parted.
Yeah, look, that's great.
So I went home and registered the bucketlistguide.com, and I was on the Google machine and I was like, who's like the Mac Daddy? Who's like the king of bucket lists in the world? Oh, look, no one. So fuck it. I call myself the world's number one bucket list expert because no one else was. Yeah. And I know what you're thinking right now. Oh, my God, I've got him on my podcast. And
I'm just honored. you took the time.
No, you weren't. Don't lie.
No, so, it's not true. It's true. Absolutely. You know that.
But no one else was claiming it, mate. And I'm stupid enough to do this. So, but the funny thing is I get caught up for press. And this is 10 years later. I get caught up for press things. There's this Washington paper or something. I don't know. They called me up and they go, oh, we've got this big, spread on bucket lists. Oh, it's a magazine. We've got this big spread on bucket lists and we've interviewed all these other people, but we really want you to be a centerpiece of this article because you're the world's number one bucket list expert. And I'm like,
I'm all over that.
you got me. Pretty busy, obviously. Pretty busy. Yeah, I'm surprised I picked up my own phone. My people. You had to go through 18 departments to get to me.
Exactly. Yeah, my assistant, she's off today or he's off today. Yeah.
the whole thing. Yeah. So you got me on the first ring. How about that?
Yeah. You're lucky. Your lucky day.
You're lucky. Yes. Yeah. So, man, it was, but, that's the story. That's how I became the bucket list guy. And, I guess with this, they call it thought leadership, but I could have spoken about a whole bunch of different things, maybe fears and phobia and personal development. It's a big umbrella. I say to a lot of other thought leaders, people who want to be experts in a certain niche, and that is pick a highway, then pick a lane, then own the lane.
Yep.
And for me, I've just gone down. I've gone an inch wide, a mile deep for the last 10 years on this stream of thought leadership. And obviously we've scaled it out in a variety of different programs and books and speeches and all that sort of thing.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, that's a great origin story. There's not very many people like get their thing named on the first, seminar that they still...
Oh, mate, there would have been 3 to 5 unicorns too.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy.
It was crazy times.
Yeah. It's crazy. I'm just envisioning rainbows, unicorns, and manna
I'm only saying that because you're from San Francisco.
Exactly. Free to be you and me and everyone.
They just walk the streets up.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I was actually last night in the Castro having dinner with my fiance and, you know, walking down Castro Street with all the rainbows and everything. Was
one of the best things I ever did was I went to the Burning Man Festival. Mm-hmm. And have you been to Burning Man?
I have not, no, but I have friends that have. Yeah.
So you live in San Francisco, you've never been to Burning Man?
Correct.
I thought that was like what you do like in elementary school.
No, what's great about Burning Man weekend in San Francisco is that everyone leaves and it's a great place to like hang out. You can get reservations at restaurants and
all the freaks leave. All the freaks leave.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's.
All the tech giants.
Leave. Yeah. Well, yeah. there's some truth to that, but we love everyone, but it's great time to be in San Francisco during Burning Man because everyone's gone. And it's like a really, it feels like it was back in the 70s and 80s. So. Without the crime and the violence, you know. But what, you know, why I wanted to talk with you, other than, I mean, I just thank you for that origin story, was this idea of, I mean, people talk about, you know, delayed gratification and then working hard and not expecting too much. And I think the context of that can sometimes be a little misleading because, you know, you should be, at least in my opinion, you should be, as you're living your life, pursuing whatever you're pursuing, enjoying that process and not delaying the enjoyment of what you're doing. And I think that's what resonates the most with what you're talking about. Because, yeah, a bucket list could be, I want to hike Kilimanjaro. I want to do a Ironman. I want to publish a book. Those are all things that, I mean, you can do when you have a 9-to-5 job. It's just you have to, like you said, write it down and go through the process. And this really resonates with me because of what we were talking about before about my late wife, Jane, and all the things she wanted to do. Mm. And then she, you know, got leukemia and died. So I mean, people that have lost loved ones too young or too early, I don't know if this is to a person this happens, but really the focus on, wow, like every day I'm here is pretty much a gift.
It's a bonus. Yeah,
it's a bonus. Yeah. And so how am I going to spend this day, this gift, to make myself better and the world better? And I think this idea of having these, you know, I mean, life should be about joy. And then, I mean, even when Jane was sick, it's sort of funny because even when Jane was sick, we would actually have fun, which is kind of shocking for people would hear, but there would be times where we just had a different kind of fun because she couldn't go out, you know, because her immune system was gone. How, when you do kind of train people and talk with people about this, is there a shift in their mindset when it comes to this? How does it play into the, like, every day is a beautiful day kind of thing?
Yeah, I'll give you some context before we go into the nitty gritty. And that is, I say a bucket list is a tangible life plan where our career plan or our business plan should fit into our life plan and not be the other way around. Mm-hmm. So it helps you compartmentalize what you do on a day-to-day basis, right? So really our jobs, careers or business should produce two things and two things only. And that is the time flow and the cash flow, time flow and cash flow for us to do the things that we want to do in our life, right? It's not about the time and the money. They're just the result of the vehicle,
right?
The double bonus, if you actually love what you do and you're of service to the community, to other people, you're actually, you know, and you're hitting your internal, your values, which is like your internal rule book, which, like I said before, 87% of people, that's way off. That's not hitting their values. They're not doing a vocation. They're not in a business or a career that's congruent to who they really are, and that creates a thing called cognitive dissonance, and creates pain. And so, at the end of the day, it's really important for people to find meaningful, purposeful, fulfilling work to do on a day-to-day basis. And I think that's a holy grail, man. If you can tick the box on, I couldn't imagine myself doing anything different. You know, I couldn't imagine, this is, and maybe your listeners are like, you know what, I need to, I need to recalibrate on that. And what has happened, the good thing about COVID, it's helped the globe, the a lot of people take that big collective deep breath in and help them go, you know, check in on benchmark. All right, am I happy? Am I doing stuff that's meaningful, purposeful, fulfilling? No, I'm not. So there's a lot of people that have upskilled in the last 6 to 8 months. There's a lot of people that have innovated, adapted, fallen into technology, gone online more, et cetera. And that's the positive that's come out of this. This new normal, people are recreating that version for themselves right now. Right. And going back to the old normal, it's never going to happen again. And I think this is a moment in time where people, if you're listening to this, guys, you need to take stock right now. Check in. Am I happy? Am I fulfilled? Have I got meaning? Have I got purpose? You know, what is your version of that? What is your version of 10 out of 10 with fulfillment, purpose, meaning? You know, where are you on a 1 to 10 scale?
Right. Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the holy grail. If you're getting what you need in terms of time and money from your vehicle and you're hitting it with your vehicle and it's giving you that, then I think that's the holy grail. So that helps you, that helps us all put it into context because, dude, you know, your example, man, it life's way too short. You know, like how many,
100%.
How many more fucking slaps do we need?
Yeah.
For us to personally wake up and go, you know what? I've got to kind of act as if I've been diagnosed.
Yeah.
I've got to draw the line in the sand. And for you, mate, it's like, all right, enough's enough.
Yeah.
Now see this as an opportunity to put your own oxygen mask on first before you can go and help others.
Right.
This is a lesson by being courageous enough to actually put stuff on, you know, write down stuff on paper, separating your bucket list from your daily to-do list. Because guess which one gets done first?
Yeah.
Your daily to-do list.
Of course, right? Yeah, because it's easy.
Yeah, and we're great at making those lists, so some people don't even write down those lists.
Yeah, I know.
So if you separate, just go through the process of writing down a bucket list. I know what's easy to do is easy not to do.
Hmm.
Right? Why do I have to even write it? All right. Go. And then go after the low-hanging fruit on that list.
Mm-hmm.
Go watch my TED Talk. What I did in my TED Talk, it's called Life's Too Short by Trav Bell. I introduced and unpacked a concept that I created years ago called the My Bucket List Blueprint. It's a 12-letter acronym. It's a 12-step system. It sounds like AA.
You might get back
on the gear after that, but hopefully not.
I
encourage everyone who I come into contact with, take time out of your life to work on your life, because we're so in it, we're so busy being busy. It's like this weird fucking badge of honor that we carry around with. How are you, mate?
Especially here.
I'm busy as a one-armed drummer. What are you bragging or complaining? Like, you
know, especially here in Silicon Valley and being an entrepreneur, you know, everyone's always bullshit. Crushing it, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And what are we paying attention to on a day-to-day basis? It's just our to-do list. Mm. And so let's carve out some time. And, hey, get an accountability partner. Get a bucket list buddy. Do it with your family, whoever. Do it with a significant other, do it with your kids, whoever, but just, you know, create that list. One for yourself, one for you and your spouse, maybe one for you and your family. But this is an opportunity, for everyone. You know, I give everyone permission to be selfish.
Mm. Yes.
Because we live in it. I know you're such a giving guy, and you're like everyone else. Take, you know, this is a self leadership lesson.
Yeah.
All right. And I want everyone to take the opportunity to be selfish around their own bucket list.
Mm.
And there's nothing wrong with that, because last thing I wish on anyone is to have a regretful life rather than a regret-free life. I want everyone to have a regret-free life. And write your list, watch the TED Talk, Write your list and then go after the low-hanging fruit and choose happiness.
Yeah.
Deliberately, yeah. Intentionally choose the small things that you can do, because we are obviously can't go to, you can't come to Australia anytime soon. I can't come to America. So let's just get rid of the whole travel thing right now.
Right.
But
right.
What are some of the things that you can do?
Yeah.
Not what can't you do, but what can you do? And a bucket list is way more than just about travel.
Yeah. Yeah. No, agreed. Agreed. I mean, you know, it's interesting because, you know, when Jane was sick for 15 months and, you know, I was her caregiver and, you know, of course you can imagine there was just a lot of giving, right? But one of the things that she gave me, sorry, I get a little oh, choked up when I talk about it. But she gave me these gifts that it's just amazing how someone would be so selfless. And I remember when she first got sick, I really wanted to go to this seminar in New York City. And it was this StoryGrid editor seminar. And if you know anything about StoryGrid, it's a just nerdy story thing. And it was for my birthday, right? And I really wanted to go, but she's sick and I'm feeling guilty that I need to be here. I need to take care of you. And she's like, no, you deserve to go. Like, this is something you've always wanted to do. You really like, this is really something you want to do. And I'm like, yeah, I know, but like, I don't know what to do. And she's like, look, I want you to do this because I want you to be happy. And I know you're happy with me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I know you're going to, we'll be to the end and all that sort of stuff. And this was a couple months before she died. This was probably 2 months before she died. And it was like, the gift was, I want you to be happy even if I'm not here. And I want you to go do this because it's for you. It's not for me. And the hole that people fall into, especially this, you know, when you have like, you have this sort of catastrophic life event where you're like, I got to take care of someone. You feel guilty about doing anything that's even remotely for you. I mean, I would feel guilty about getting a cup of coffee, like going to the cafe for 10 minutes was like a dream of mine every morning because I'm sleeping in this hospital. Hospitals are awful. She's sick. We can't sleep. And I literally wanted to run away from the hospital room and just spend 15 minutes in a normal situation. Because second I walk through that hospital room door, my
just
world
all encompassing. It's full on. Yeah.
Totally different. And she was really good, even though she was sick and dying and was feeling awful and hallucinating and through chemo and like all these things, to be like, you need to do something for you. I want you to be happy. And I think I learned that. I mean, that's obviously that's a traumatic thing to have to learn the hard way. But if you're in a relationship, even if it's with the work, with your work or with your spouse or with your family, like, you're right. You sometimes got to put the oxygen mask on first, because if you can't help yourself, you can't help anyone else.
Well, the thing is too, I think, it's an interesting thought, because I think when you're staring down the barrel of a use-by date, it forces you to become yes man. You know, that movie with Jim Carrey, just yes. And she was probably thinking that, well, if I was in your situation, I'd just say yes.
Yeah.
And I'd go for it.
Yeah.
We're just talking about Burning Man and all that sort of thing. And my best mate passed away last year. He was 41.
Wow.
Only knew him from stage four. I only knew him because he was diagnosed with stage four brain cancer 6 months before I met him. And we actually got introduced because I was now the bucket list guy. Cam was, you know, cancer guy, and we were introduced by a mutual friend, and he basically said, "Well, you're as bad as mad as him," and he runs around doing your bucket list, and you've got, you know, not that much time left. You probably need to talk to him, and then maybe we could sort out something.
Yeah,
and you know, I was ignorant at the time, and I said, "So, oh, g'day, Cam, how are you going? Yeah, good. Hit it off straight away," and I said, "So stage four, mate, how many stages is there in cancer? And he's gone, four. Four, what is four the and he goes, yep, that's the worst one.
It's the worst one, yeah.
I said, brain. So they can't really chop that out real easy, can they, that one? He's like, nah. Yeah. He's got a big scar. He had a big scar.
Yeah.
And it can grow really quickly. It can develop friends really quickly. Right. We better fucking get onto it then, don't we?
what do we wait? We're burning daylight, bro. We're burning daylight.
Yeah. Lovely to meet you. Let's go party.
Yeah.
But the thing is, he lived 7 years past his original use-by date.
Wow.
And a lot of the stuff that I've done, a lot of the stories that I've got, and I, you know, we went to Burning Man together. Yeah, you know, it didn't help that we did Vegas for 7 days prior to Burning Man, but, you know, that's a whole other story. You know, my mate was dying. What can I do? You know, come on.
It's crazy. You do what you got to do.
But you know, we did a whole lot. I live vicariously through him, you know, and, you know, just lately, at the end of last year, it was, you know, he finally succumbed to it and it got the better of him. But, you know, and he was completely selfless. It was really interesting, you know, just like your partner, completely selfless. It was all about saying yes to stuff, you know, being present. And absolutely, you know, he was just like, and he became like an advocate, and he didn't even kind of buy into the whole, I guess, cancer world. You know, he'd done some public speaking and stuff like that, and they said, oh, you know, can you come and present to our groups and other? He's like, no, I don't want to be around other people with cancer.
Yeah,
I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. I want to look at the positive thing. You know, I don't want to be in any freaking support groups.
Yeah.
Okay. I know where this is going.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't need to talk about it. Make it worse. I don't need to be the hero of this.
right. No, I mean, and when you lose someone you care about, and you go through this grieving process and everything, and a lot of times people would say, oh, you should go to a grief group. Like for me, like I was a widower at 46, right? You know, like that's not the time to be a widow. It's not to any time, but you know, it's like I'm this younger person.
There's something
person.
I didn't know. Do we call guys widowers too?
Yeah. Widower. Yeah. There's widow and widower. A widower is a man.
Oh, so guys are the widower.
Widower. Right. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I know. You learn something new every day. It's something you probably wouldn't ever want to know.
Worst thing I ever wanted to know, but now I know it. That is shit.
Yeah, well, but what's interesting
today?
Yeah, exactly. But
hey, honey.
Exactly.
Fun fact.
Yeah, fun fact. But to your friend's point, right? You know, I would go to these grief groups, right? And because I'm like, okay, I should try to like talk about it. And there's a whole weird thing with men and
grief
and you know, sharing feelings and everything. And there's a lot to unpack there. And there's a lot of challenges and struggles. And, you know, men have got not only got great traits and other things, but there's a lot of stuff we got to work on and society needs to work on in general. But
100%.
I'd go to these grief groups and I'd be the only man. And I'd be sitting there like, okay, this is cool. But to your friend's point, it's like, we're all talking about woe is me, private pity party, the world sucks. And I'm like, okay, yes, but I got to get through the next day, man. Like, is there anything you got for me that's not like, woe is me, let's talk about my feelings more. Like every time I would talk about it for the first year, I mean, even I got a little choked up. No, for the first year, I would relive it.
Yeah, you don't need it.
I don't want to feel those feelings. It's not that I'm suppressing my grief and sorrow because I would talk about it. Of course, I went to therapy. I still go to therapy to sort it out. But like I had to, the thing that's really interesting is I had to deal with the feeling, the physical part of what it made me feel. And it makes you feel
all
awful.
The time.
It's like the worst hangover 10 orders of magnitude worse, and you just feel like you can't breathe and everything's in slow motion. It's just, you know, I mean, you know, when you probably lost your friend, you felt this like, like there's this void, and the void just sort of collapses in on you, right?
I couldn't even comprehend what you went through, and you know, it's really interesting, and that kind of reminds me of, you know, like we're mental health on another massive global level. Mental health is a massive problem, and it already was before COVID, right?
Right.
So I you know, everything that I teach is, you know, as the world's number one bucket list expert, I think we went through that before.
You're certified.
You're knighted.
You're knighted. Hey, I mean, you've been on this show. You're knighted for it.
Yeah, I know. So famous. But the point is that everything that I talk about is really founded on positive psychology, and that is helping people. It's really the science, the psychology of happiness, right? Mm-hmm. But I thought the bucket list guy was a lot more me than the happiness guy. That was a little bit more lame. But at the end of the day, you know, like what we're providing out there is like real tools to be able to help people self-manage out of where they are. I built this for the depressed me.
Yeah.
This is a reaction. This whole system that we've created and the My Bucket List Blueprint was all built. I built it for me. And just so happens it's helped a shitload of other people. Yeah. But the point is that people going through mental health, especially right now, getting into things like, and don't get me wrong, they all have their place in the timeline of mental health. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
You know, there's very acute phases where shit, you just got to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know, through to, you know, later on. But if you're continually talking about depression, anxiety, we've even got and suicides and this sort of thing, and what you've been through, even we've even got this thing now called the loneliness epidemic, which is the adverse effect of social media. We know what a pandemic is. We're very clear on what a pandemic is.
Yeah. Sure.
And so an epidemic is not far behind. And this, yes, we're meant to be more connected these days. We're actually more disconnected.
100%.
And we lost that human connection, which was what we once had. And it's actually called the loneliness epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do we talk, you know, going into depression groups and, you know, talking about it, it's kind of like AA to a certain, you know, like I've never been to AA. I had an ex that was in AA.
Right.
But, you know, do you just talk about it, relive it, or just get on with it? There's a time and a place for it, you know, like, are the tools lacking to just get on with it?
Yeah, I think they are. You know, I think for sure. I mean, especially
the transition out of it, is that well documented? Is there enough information to really help people use it, compartmentalize it, that's the breakdown before breakthrough, the confusion before clarity, the storm before the rainbow kind of scenario. It's like, all right, let's identify it. Let's put a label on it. Let's put it in a box and let's move on.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I totally agree with you. I think that's
why I built this whole bucket list thing to help people move on and start to live again, because a lot of people are living by default rather than by design. A lot of people are just existing and not truly living.
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. I mean, I think, Part of my, you know, process of dealing with grief and everything was, I mean, I like to write things down. That's like my processing mechanism. Like, you know, write your bucket list down. Well, I started writing a memoir about my experience with Jane and the whole thing and the process of trying to get it published. But the therapeutic cathartic process of systematically going through and writing these things down, but having an endpoint to the suffering and the endpoint to the experience, not to say I'm ever going to move on. I'm clearly going to move through it.
No.
You know, Jane will always be with me. That experience will always be with me. The people that were in my life that supported me, that loved me, that still love me today, that are all that. I mean, through that process of grieving, you know, I stopped drinking. You know, I've been sober for over 2 years, which has been a revelation for me, because that was a whole process as well. But But the whole idea of the moving on, the moving through, putting it in its place, that is the thing that is just no one, like, I think there is actually a, it's almost like a therapy industrial complex where they just want to keep you in therapy. Like, and that's fine if you keep on like jumping to the next level. Like, again, I still am in therapy because there's good reason for me to do that, to work on. I'm not working on the grief. I'm working on what's the next level. And I really like the way you kind of, not only the metaphor, the bucket list, the compartmentalization of, hey, look, eventually you're going to die. You're going to be, you know, it's, you kick the bucket or whatever, but the process of compartmentalizing these things, when you're ready for them to be done, when they're done, they're done, and move on or move through them. Don't like dwell. I mean,
you're going to draw that, and everyone's different, of course, but there's going to be that line in the sand that you've got to draw and go, you know what? It's done now. Not to totally diminish it or anything like that. It's just like, all right, there's a lot of fucking bandwidth being spent on this. There's a lot of bandwidth being spent on this. It's been my whole world for a number of years. When am I going to reduce that bandwidth around that traumatic issue and compartmentalize it and still give it some bandwidth, but then like really start to focus on the bigger, the bolder, the brighter, the more beautiful picture. And that's what the human experience is all about, if you ask me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the whole, like, the what's next, the beauty. Yeah. That's why it's just, how come more people don't do this? Who's going to be the number two bucket list guy? Because, you know.
I own that domain too. I don't know, but I'll be talking to my lawyers.
exactly.
But we're trying to get it out there. You know, like we're doing the books and I'm doing as many podcasts and seminars as I possibly can while I can. And we've scaled it out through our bucket list coaches that are out there teaching this stuff. So that's a cool thing. We've created a whole bunch of different programs and stuff that we go out and teach, from families to Fortune 500 companies. And we've got bucket list coaches in 22 countries, even in countries where if you translate the word bucket list, it makes no freaking sense at all. But everyone still gets it. You know, it's really entertaining when you go run programs in places like Vietnam. Yeah. And it's like, bucket list.
But people
get it.
Yeah.
That was a really bad translation of Vietnamese just then, but you get the picture. But they're doing their own bit in their neck of the woods. They're teaching these positive psychology principles with this theme of bucket list, this brand of bucket list over the top. And you know, we're getting these. It's like for our coaches, it's like a life coaching. It's like being a life coach, but without some life coach, you know. Because everyone, you know, you say you're a life coach. So we've made it more tangible, made it cooler, and made it more applicable to all sorts of, you know, people. And you know, we only do through that system, we only do sort of group coaching. We don't do one-on-one stuff. So we want to affect the lives of a lot of people. I mean, our mission is we want to help 10 million people over the next 10 years, 10 million people to live purposely happy lives, purposely fulfilled lives, should I say, or what I say, tick it before you kick it. There we go. Mm-hmm.
So
it's a huge mission. So we ask every coach when we onboard them, you know, what's going to be your contribution towards that? You know, I'm doing my bit. I'm doing as many programs as I possibly can, but what's going to be your play in this? So that's where we join forces and off we go. Wow. So yeah, I'm just got this piece of DNA. I'm not happy just helping a handful of people in my lifetime. So I guess that's the confidence that comes with being a public speaker or being stupid enough to be a public speaker.
Bold enough, I would say.
You just sort of callous yourself and you just go out there. But it really has helped a lot of people, this whole philosophy, I guess, over the last 10 years, yeah. enough to give me the green light to play an even bigger game with it.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, my whole philosophy is if you know something, you should teach something and share it. If you've gone through something of substantial problem or trauma or struggle, I personally think it's your duty to share it. It's my 100%. Opinion.
I actually say that to a lot of people, a lot of thought leaders, is if you've been through some stuff, how dare you keep the learnings within you while you're here?
Yeah.
Because there is the older version of you that is waiting for someone like you in present tense to teach them this stuff, whether it be through a book, like you said, whether it be through an event, a seminar, a program, or whatever it is.
Right.
Get these learnings, package up these learnings to help other people.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
how dare you die with those learnings within you?
Right. Right. I mean, that's the reason why I'm writing the memoir, because I know.
Get it out, man.
Yeah. I know that there are men out there that feel extremely lonely and frustrated by how they can't share or process their grief of losing their wife or a loved one because of the way society views it.
Yeah.
But more importantly, no one's out there saying like, hey, I know what you've been through. I got your back. Like, this sucks.
90% of those guys that have been through what you've been through won't write a book.
Oh, yeah. Or 99%. I mean, you know,
women
deal with this better than men, and primarily because they're socialized to learn how to share, and they have a vested interest in their collaboration together. Whereas traditionally in male culture, there's a different kind of collaboration. It's a different construct. It's not any bad or worse. It's just done in a different way. But I basically wanted to write something where if I was going through what I went through, I wouldn't feel so alone, because it's a lonely thing. And I think, Trav, everyone needs to have a bucket list and check out what you do and, you know, really appreciate your time, man. This has been such a great, inspiring, yet soulful, yet enlightening experience.
I feel like we can talk for hours, man. I've actually forgot it was a podcast and we're recording this and we're just chatting.
Yeah. Well, that's the idea, you know, get to know each other.
Which is awesome, man, and happy to do a round two, man. I really encourage. Okay, so I've got a challenge for you and your listeners.
Okay,
you're going to watch my TED talk.
Okay,
right. Life's Too Short by the world's number one bucket list expert, Trav Bell. Then you're going to go through the My Bucket List Blueprint. I've got a book coming out soon. It's called the My Bucket List Blueprint. It's basically my TED talk, but on paperback, and that is my bucket list to finally get my book done. But yeah, watch that. Then write your list out, and then I challenge you, mate. You have to send it to me.
Okay.
You're going to email it to me, trav@thebucketlistguide.com. You're going to send it to me or DM me or whatever the freaking millennials say these days. Yeah. Just don't TikTok it to me.
Or Snapchat. I have no idea how to use that stuff.
I don't know. Yeah. Anything could come through Snapchat. I don't know what happens there, but it's or I'll meet you back on Tinder. Or sorry, Matchmaker.
Yeah, matchmaker.fm. Exactly. I know, exactly. It's awesome. But
I want you to send, I challenge you. You've got to send it to me.
Yeah, I will. I will take you up on that challenge. I will write it up and send it to you.
Because I've got magical powers. and that is to make some of this bucket list stuff come to fruition.
Yeah.
But the first thing is make people accountable to it.
Yeah. Agreed. And write it down. No, I'm with you. And so, yeah, let's get that going, and can't wait to chat more when we got a little more time, and good luck with everything. And like, yeah, can't say enough good things about every day is precious, man, as you know, and don't waste your precious days.
100%. And, you know, I thank you for being vulnerable, being yourself, and sharing, mate. And I wish more guys would do that. And I really hope all the listeners, watchers have really taken something out of this.
Yeah, I think they will. I think they will. All right. Take care.
Bye, buddy.
Thanks for listening to the Entrepreneur Ethos podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did creating it. My hope is that you learned something that can make you a little bit better. If you enjoyed the podcast, please do share it with friends and review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also join my email list by visiting theentrepreneurethos.com to get my thoughts on what I'm doing to get better, as well as what I'm working on. You can also pick up my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, if you want to learn the traits, values, and beliefs that I think we need to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient entrepreneur, and frankly, world community. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at TheDailyMBA and let me know if you have any questions or recommendations for a guest you'd like me to talk to. Also, drop me a note if you try anything we talked about on this or any other episode. I'd love to hear what's working for you. Until next time, keep getting better.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.